When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors, a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Seamless. And
beautiful.
Some music for you. Tom Johnson, music composer extraordinaire. It's not your music, and I'm not quite sure whether you can dance to my music or not. So how did you feel?
I feel that you need to talk to me afterwards, and I can provide better music than that for you.
I will take you up on that, because ladies and gentlemen, min, it is my tremendous pleasure to welcome to the Good Listening To podcast Clearing, Tom Johnson, known on his website as Thomas Johnson. So he's got a posher version of his name. You're sitting there in your musician's emporium, I see. You have a studio, do you not?
I do, yeah. And I love it.
And by the way, welcome back. I Googled you before we started, and apparently you're an English botanist and Royal Colonel in the English Civil War. You died in 1644. Welcome back. And you were known as the father of British field botany.
Well, there you go. I had no idea, but I'm very proud of it, actually.
And really welcome back. And so, yes, so that was the first thing that came up. But the good news is I also went a bit deeper, and I know that you are Thomas Johnson. And can I just blow a bit of happy smoke at you?
Please do.
So Tom, in his own words, I live in the Cotswolds in the United Kingdom. I've composed hundreds of scores for all sorts of different kinds of theatre music, from tiny studios, mid-scale theatres, parks, schools, on Broadway, on the beach from Minnesota to Moscow, ranging from solo harp to full orchestra. And that indeed is just a sort of frisson of your extraordinary and sublime talent. So you're extremely welcome, Tom Johnson.
Well, remarkably, I think all of that is actually true, which is, I mean, what I said about living in the Cotswolds and all those things I've done, you know, not a lie there.
Absolutely. And we have history in that you, way back when, were also one of the wonderful musician ensemble within Instant Wit, the comedy organization show that I co-run with Stephanie Weston to this day. Yeah. And you will be able to speak, I promise. And I'm delighted to see you, by the way. Really happy to see you.
Yeah.
We reconnected at a mutual friend's 60th birthday, Craig Edwards, who's also been a guest here in the podcast too. You also mentioned Vic Llewellyn. We've got lots of people. Vic Llewellyn, who I, as you pointed out, immediately went live, but then needed to go for a wee. So the good news was I've done a wee today and all is good.
And so have I.
Yes. And at our age. And yes, and what I was going on to say is that you were very brilliantly the composer for a short film that I made circa 2006 called Knock Knock.
So, good God, was it 2006?
It was, which is aging as both. And as you said, you know, at our age, what did you talk about? When we need to do a wee at our age, but you said...
In Ruskin, we have a saying that an hour is a long time for an old bladder.
Wonderful. Yeah. And talking of old bladders, here you are. So, two old people who are going to blather and blather on. Yeah. It's my great pleasure to welcome you to the Good Listening To show. It's going to be a curated journey through the usual familiar storytelling metaphors. There's going to be a clearing a tree, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, a random bit of cake as well. It's all to play for. Yes. So, first of all, how's morale? What's your story of the day, please, Tom Johnson?
My story of the day? Well, I woke up and, of course, it's an absolutely stunning day here in Stroud. The sun is shining. The frost was on the ground. My nephew is over from Ireland. So we went for a little stroll down through the village and into the fields. And that was delightful. And a little bit, you know, I had the good fortune. There's a pop-up pub that happens every so often across the road, which is, it's like 100 feet away from my house. So every so often there's this pub. In the school chapel, old school chapel, and chapel school room, that's what it's called.
I'd say that's my kind of school with a pub in the chapel.
Well, exactly. It's, anyway, they overestimated how much beer they needed this weekend. So on Sunday morning, they said to me, "We've still got like half a barrel of beer. Do you want it?" So, and I thought, well, why the hell not? So anyway, long story short, last night, quite a lot of free beer imbibed, and it was delightful. So a little bit sketchy this morning, but, you know, the sunshine has cleared that up, and here I am now. Yeah. And I played an accordion as well. So,
and what did you say about the accordion?
I played a bit of accordion just before we talked.
Yes.
To practice for a little two-hander show that I'm doing with a friend of mine, Chris Garner, who... you might know. I don't know. He works with the Natural Theatre Company. But anyway, we're doing a Christmas carol, a sort of reading for posh restaurants, a few dates this Christmas. And I'm playing a bit of accordion, you know, a bit of Christmas money to pay for the turkey.
Yeah. Very Dickensian of you. And indeed, you are brilliant at the accordion. That was the main instrument that you used for the Knock Knock music as well. And right. You're great company. I think regionally there's the lovely Pete Rosser as well, who's another accordionist.
Although he's up in the North Country now.
Ha ha ha. And yes, you are a multi-instrumentalist. I mean, just looking at you can see that. So just run us through the sort of the different instruments one can play, please.
Well, my main instrument is the violin. And the guitar, various different guitars, electric and acoustic. I picked up the accordion. I learned the accordion really specifically for theatre because it's such an incredible, it's a brilliant instrument for theatre because it's portable and it's much more adaptable and multi-genre than people give it credence for. You know, people think of it as the French instrument, but you can do an incredible number of different kind of things. And it's a very atmospheric instrument. So I sort of learned that for theatre specifically. So I suppose that's it, really. Violin, guitar, accordion. Yeah.
And I was happily dissing you this morning by Tom Always on the Fiddle Johnson was what I put.
Yes, I've never heard that joke before.
So I'd just like to apologise for doing it again, obviously. Hurrah. So you're extremely welcome. Anything else you'd like to say before I get you on the open road?
Anything you should like to say?
No, anything you'd like to say before I get you on the open road.
Well, that's just delightful to be here. And, you know, I'm also sort of terrified about the idea of talking about myself for an hour because I'm quite good at boring myself to death. So
don't you worry. I'll shut you up before an hour. Don't you worry. OK, so let's get you on the open road. So it's going to be a clearing a tree, juicy storytelling exercise called 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, some alchemy, some gold, cheeky bit of Shakespeare, couple of random squirrels and a cake. Hurrah.
The cake is, I don't understand the cake bit, but I suppose I'll find out in due course.
Yes, that's the final storytelling metaphor where you get to put a cherry on the cake, but I will explain that.
Okay, good.
If anyone's struggling with what the heck is this about, think Desert Island Discs, but in a clearing and with stories rather than music. All good.
It's kind of how I explained it to my nephew last night, actually. So there you go.
Through beer goggles, because you were imbibing a bit.
Oh, yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Lovely.
And that helps. So,
and by the way, thank you for saying yes. It was a delight to reconnect with you a couple of weeks ago, as I did. So I'm really, really sincerely happy to see you. If I was sitting next to you, I might even try and lick your face. Thank you. So, Thomas Johnson, extraordinary composer. You are deeply gifted, by the way. And we're going to be able to talk about exactly where we can find out more about you and your music and your sort of archive on SoundCloud, that sort of thing, and current projects towards the end.
Yeah.
So, welcome to The Clearing. where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to get told. So first of all, let's base it in your clearing. Where is, what is a clearing like for Tom Johnson, composer? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational and able to think?
Well, it probably is here, actually, in my studio. So this is the egg house. It's called an egg house. It's called the egg house because from above it's egg-shaped. It's very hard to explain, but it is, believe me. This is a really good focused place where I can find my flow. It's incredibly calm and amazing, beautiful view out the front here across the Cotswolds to Selsley Common. And it's all just very nice and contained, and I've got all my stuff, and it's calm. It's a calm place to be and to work.
And there is a backstory as well, because I remember very powerfully you did have a house fire and a Christmas tree incident.
There was indeed, yes.
So do you want to just tell us a bit more about that? Because you said something that really struck me when you said most of the time insurers tell us that people move away from the house in which nearly burned down, but you've absolutely remade it as you've reconnected to it.
Yeah. So do you want me to tell you about the fire?
Unless you're going to talk about that later, but...
No, I'm not. I wasn't planning on talking about it, but so 12th night, some 12 years ago, we used to have candles on our Christmas tree, and 12th night we were going to get rid of the decorations in the tree, but we're going to have one last burn. Oh. And we did have a last burn. So my dear darling Rachel lit a candle. But in front of her eyes, the tree caught fire in front of her very eyes. And I can't tell you how quickly it went up. I was sort of standing looking and, there's a fire, called the fire brigade, like immediately. And within a minute, the flames were arcing across the room. And there was no putting it out. There was no question of being able to put water on it. Right? My 11-year-old son was just about to get in the bath. So we had to call him downstairs very quickly. And honestly, the whole thing went up in flames very, very quickly. And we were outside in the freezing cold. And it was a very, very cold winter. It was the coldest we've had for a long time. So it was sort of -4 or something outside. And there we were outside the house wearing very little, because it was all nice and cozy inside, watching our house burn down. It was very weird, very weird. And the fire brigade couldn't make it very quickly because the roads were all closed because there was so much snow. So they couldn't get here. Eventually they got here in little 4x4s. They couldn't then get the fire hydrant because it was under snow. So it was sort of mad and surreal. And so that happened. And then we were out. We couldn't live in a house for 6 months or something like that.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
But no, you're right. The insurer said most people move out after they've burnt their house down. But we didn't see any reason to. We love it. And it was all redone nicely because we were insured, thank God. And the advantage was that everything was new after that. So, you know.
Out of adversity comes great reinvigoration, yes.
Well, exactly. So, all the white goods were just brand new, and all the walls and windows and everything were sort of spick and span and brand new. So there was that advantage to it. But I would still not recommend, dear viewer, doing this to your house just to get a few new white goods. It's probably not worth it.
But it didn't strike me at the time, nor do you strike me as somebody who's all about the insurance job.
No, it was really grim. Yes. It was really grim. at the time, and I'm able to look back on it with a sort of gallows smile now, but it was grim at the time. Yeah,
very, very Dickensian again, coming full circle to that. You're about to do another Christmas Carol, but it was on the Twelfth Night and all that stuff.
Well, exactly. Yes. Yeah, we're sort of very careful about not setting fire to the house on Twelfth Night these days. Yes. And we've succeeded so far, so that's good.
And there is that expression, lightning never strikes twice. So hopefully...
Well, actually, the insurer said, amazingly, our insurance premium went down after that. And I said, what? How come? And they said, well, because it's just never happened. You know, touch wood. People don't generally have two house fires, so it doesn't sort of do anything to your premium, which is weird.
Wow, it sounds like you've even got a kind insurance company there as well.
I have to say, they were pretty bloody good, yeah.
Yes. Wow. I've never thought of sort of trying to sort of amplify or crank the handle of an insurance company.
Well, no. Just before. No.
Well, thank you for telling us that. But what's so lovely is you're still there within the Egg Studio, as I think you called it.
Yes. So the egg house is separate from the house. Yeah. So the egg house was untouched. And actually, all my musical instruments were in here. So it could have been a lot worse. So I didn't lose any of my fiddle was in here and stuff. So there were a lot of really precious musical things that weren't touched. So that was good.
And it's lovely to have your clearing as being right where you're sat now within your own muse house, if you like, called the Egg the Egg House.
Egg House.
Lovely. And so now I'm going to arrive with a tree, if I may, but not a Christmas tree. Easy, Tiger. Nor are there candles on it. I'm going to arrive with a tree now. We're waiting for God to ask. I'm going to shake your tree now to see which storytelling apples fall out. How'd you like these apples? So this is your second bit of preparation, apart from waiting for clearing, which is your responses to the 4-3-2-1. 5 minutes to have thought about the four things that have shaped you, Tom, the three things that inspire you, the two things that never fail to grab your attention. That's where the two squirrels come in. Oh, squirrels. You know what never fails to grab your attention. And then the quirky or unusual fact about you. So over to you. How would you like to shake the canape of your trees, please?
Well, let's do the four shaping things first. So these are things that kind of... So, yeah, they're the things that have shaped my life, isn't it? That's what you're sort of after. So the first one is when I was 11 years old, I was a minstrel, medieval minstrel, in Chilham Castle in Kent. So this was a sort of rowdy affair where every Friday and Saturday night people came and they had a medieval banquet in this castle. And they had mead and all sorts of stuff. And wenches, you probably wouldn't do that anymore, would you? But there were wenches serving things. And then there were minstrels. And there was a sort of grown-up minstrel band. But age 11, the manager discovered I played the fiddle and he thought it'd be really cute to have me play. So I did a 20-minute set in my tights and things on Friday and Saturday night every weekend. And it was, I think, you know, looking back on it is one of the reasons why I ended up doing what I do now, because it was pretty rowdy. The audience was pretty rowdy. The mead was free and free flowing. And so at an early age, I was having to play the violin in front of raucous audiences. So I learned how to do it. I learned how to control potentially quite tricky audiences from a really young age, and I enjoyed it, really loved it. I really loved the showing off bit of it, you know, and of course they loved me because I was a young lad playing the violin. Also it kind of introduced me to the idea of a good night out, can't remember who was it who wrote that book. Can't remember his name now. Anyway, the whole idea of theatre should be a good night out. And I suppose I was sort of introduced to the idea of a good night out and the importance of that when I was 11. So that's one of the shaping things.
Your ability to, as you say, control a potentially raucous audience using music, I've definitely experienced that. Right. Tiernan Og was one of the many, many shows that I've seen that you've done for. Yeah. That was just a really good example of that. Not that the audience, but the story's, you know, wonderfully anarchic and all about, you know, that was just one example of how, gosh, the music adds that extra fifth dimension to the show.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, obviously when I was 11 doing that thing, it was a gig rather than doing theatre. But, you know, I think I brought a lot of that energy into my theatre writing. And actually, that sort of does bring me onto that, the second shaper, which was punk rock. So I remember, you know, age 16, because I was 15 in 1976 when it all started happening. So I was absolutely the right age for punk. And I remember a friend giving me an album by a band called The Clash. And I put it on and it was like nothing I'd ever heard. And I think it's really hard now for us to remember that, to remember how incredibly radical that stuff was, how completely fresh and totally unusual and unique that sound was at the time, because we're just really used to it now. Anyway, so yeah, I heard The Clash and I was sort of, that was an epiphany. That was a sort of moment of, wow, this is amazing, because I suppose what it was the directness of it. And, you know, no longer are we singing in American accents with 85-minute drum solos. We're singing in our voices about things that matter, and nice and tight and compact and concise and with incredible energy. An old DIY thing of it, you know, anyone can do it. And I think that was really formative for me. I think that really did shape how I approach theatre music, composing theatre music as well. Sort of realizing that energy and emotional truth can sometimes be more important than technical virtuosity. I mean, I don't want to. Technical virtuosity is really important. I'm not sort of saying it isn't, but. I think that I've never stopped having some sort of rawness in my approach, whether it be my composing approach or my playing approach. And I think that comes from the old punk thing. So, yeah, that was a big shaping thing for me.
And beautifully connected, those two things, and going back to you being a sort of medieval minstrel. So there's historical legacy into how to entertain going on there.
I think so. I think my 11... to 15-year-old experience of gigging these regular pretty raucous gigs, already I had a sort of sense of anarchy before anarchy in the UK happened, and so I was primed and ready to go.
Nicely put, lovely segue. And we've got the gift of the image of you in tights as well, which just,
I know, well, marvellous. Yeah. The little triangular felt cap with a feather in it,
yes,
and a little jerkin, which I have to say my dad made for me, which I think is rather nice. It wasn't my mum, my dad made this kind of kit for me, which is quite sweet, really.
Yes, lovely.
Lovely. Well,
third shapage
was just a bit of an extraordinary bit of synchronicity, I don't know what you'd call it, really. But so 24 years oldish, in living in Sheffield, having recently graduated, wondering what on earth to do with my life. And I was sort of interested in,
you know, just hold that line, Colin. Did you study music at Sheffield?
No, I neither studied music nor in Sheffield. So I studied English literature at Oxford.
I thought you said you wind forward to you being the age in the 20s, and I heard Sheffield, so I made that up.
Yeah, no, you didn't. No, I was living in Sheffield. It's just by that point I moved away from Oxford, where I lived 3 years in Oxford, where I studied English, and then my girlfriend at the time did German, and she did it in Sheffield, so I moved with her, and then a week after arriving she dumped me, but there you go. And there I was in Sheffield thinking, oh, right, so my girlfriend's dumped me. What on earth am I doing here? Anyway, I was a musician, obviously, and sort of vaguely interested in maybe theatre. And a friend of mine said, oh, there's this newspaper called The Stage Newspaper. You should buy it because there are adverts in it for jobs. So I bought it. I never heard of it. And there was an advert for a job in that first, very first Stage Newspaper I bought. And the advert was a company in Stroud, which I'd never heard of, called Dr. Foster's Theatre Company. And they were looking for a musician. And I applied and got an interview and got the job. And just that friend of mine saying bye, this stage newspaper, was completely transformed my life, because I live in Stroud now. And Dr. Foster's, I got the job, and then I worked with them for 5 years and made a really important, really central connection to this guy, Greg Banks,
yes,
who co-ran the company. And he's become a lifelong friend and also a lifelong colleague. And so we've made a lot of theatre together, including going out to America and working there together. And I sort of learnt my theatre chops with Greg, really. So that one kind of by the stage newspaper comment shaped my life in a, you know, an extraordinary way.
And I love that expression, theatre chops. I learnt my theatre chops.
Theatre chops, yeah.
Yeah.
And I want, you know, if I hadn't seen that mate on that day, this whole thing wouldn't have happened. Something else would have happened.
There is that lovely thing, isn't there? What's meant for you won't pass you by, provided you're receptive to what the heck's going on in front of you.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, yeah. And it makes you wonder what other paths weren't taken.
Yes.
Because they just didn't come
and
up.
Every now and again, opportunities are like doors on or windows on totally lubricated hinges.
Yeah.
Blow open for you.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it?
And Greg Banks, I reconnected with him just the same night I reconnected with about 2 weeks ago. Yeah, exactly.
Well, he lives over there. I mean, you know, sort of 2 miles that way. He's, you know, really good friend. And yeah, we've done lots of work together. So, yeah.
So great shapage, the stage newspaper, that fateful day.
That fateful day, I know.
Fourth shapage, and sorry if I interrupted you.
Fourth shapage. I mean, I don't think it sort of is particularly a career thing or anything, but the birth of my children, it's impossible to not think of that as, you know, the most massive radical shapage of anything that could have happened, really. So, but that's just a sort of huge yes, life thing, you know.
The Gabriel and the Zackage that arrived.
Gabriel and the Zackage, exactly.
Lovely. Anything else you want to say about how they've shaped you? You don't have to, because that says it.
It's so kind of myriad and huge. It's impossible to sort of, everything really. You know?
Yeah, no, I love that. Just let it hang there.
Yeah.
Gabriel and the Zackage.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And now, three things that inspire you. And if there's any overlap, don't worry, because this is all very inspirational anyway, what you're talking about.
Okay. I mean, sticking with family. My mum, she's incredibly inspiring. She's 96. She's lived through, you know, so much in her life, not just the kind of history of her life, like, you know, the Second World War and, you know, all those things, but also she's, you know, she's dealt with an extraordinary number of bereavements and very hard things to deal with in her life. And she just... the reason she's inspirational is she just keeps going. She's got this endless positivity. That she's unbowed by everything that comes her way. Even now, you know, she's got dementia now and mouth cancer and lives in a care home. And every time I see her, there's a sort of, she's still able to produce this incredible humour to it all. And everybody in the care home, they all love her to bits. And, you know, they say that she's incredibly funny and stuff. And, wow, I'd like to be able to have some of that as I get older. I suppose it's resilience, you know.
Yes. Resilience. And the lovely Johnson matriarch, what's her name?
Joan.
Wonderful. Joan Johnson. Lovely bit of alliteration in there as well.
Yes. Well, she was, well, her elder sister was going to be Mavis Joan Johnson. But it turned out that Mavis was born. And then the midwife said, Mrs. Hill, there's another one. So they, her mum didn't know that she had twins until literally she was giving birth.
Wow.
So Mavis Joan Hill became two children, Mavis Hill and Joan Hill.
Lovely. Yes, lovely.
Yeah.
I'm happy that she's still with us and yeah, gosh, how profound. And she's still got an optimistic way of inspiring. That's wonderful.
Exactly, yeah. Then I suppose a big inspiration for me is just people singing together. And that can be, that's really wide, I think. I'm really moved by people singing together in all sorts of different formats. So if people are all singing together just in a sort of sing-along in a pub or something, I find it very moving. It's so connecting. But then there's, you know, in a more kind of pure musical sense, close harmony singing song by an incredibly talented choir is just incredibly spine tingly and incredibly beautiful. And then community choirs. I do a lot of work with community choirs and have done a lot of work over the years. And it's just, yeah, people singing together. It's just, it's such a direct sense of community that singing brings. And it allows people to be very emotional and drop their guard in a sort of safe space, you know.
As a galvanizing of energy. Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. Of course, musical direction is the extra dimension to beyond being a composer as well. The fact you are a choir master as well.
So you're
composing in all aspects because you're doing instruments and voices, which of course are instruments of themselves.
Exactly. And a lot of my work is for voices. I think, you know, in some ways, actually, I think it's possibly writing for the human voice is possibly the thing I like to do most of all. It's just so immediate and direct and emotional and beautiful and human. And I just love working with choirs as well. I love the energy of it. And I, particularly with community choirs, I just love getting a bunch of people together and going for excellence, you know, knowing that you can make it sound brilliant. You don't have to go for second best. You can make it sound fantastic. And I find that, you know, members of a community choir are really up for working hard and excelling. And that's exciting. It's really thrilling to get, yeah, to make a sound, a collective sound that nobody thought was really possible to do. I think it's brilliant.
Beautifully put. And do you have a central hub choir, or are you peripatetic where you go wherever the choirs require you?
Wherever the choirs require you. I don't have my own choir. Quite often I'm not working with any choirs at all, but there was a job I did a few years ago, which I really loved, which was a tobacco factory in Bristol. They did a play called Beautiful Thing, and Mike Tweddle, the artistic director who directed the show, it was his idea to have a community, to create a tobacco factory community choir, especially for the show. And then my job was to select and arrange a collection of 90s pop songs to turn into choral pieces, because the play was set in the 90s. It was really, really, really good fun. And we had a ball, and we made our own choir, and I arranged these 90s pop songs, and it was good fun. And I'm really glad to say that the choir still exists.
Wonderful.
Because I really wanted there to be legacy from the project. I didn't want the choir to just stop, you know, after the show. And Ailey Debonair, who's a brilliant woman, and she works at the Tobacco Factory. She has nurtured the choir and made sure it carries on. So that's brilliant. But now, from a choral point of view, I'm involved in a company called Frozen Light. They're an amazing company. They do multi-sensory theatre for audiences of people living with profound and multiple learning disabilities. That's their audience. So their theatre is multisensory. So it's all about smells and textures and lights and sounds and all that sort of thing. And they wanted to make a choral piece. So the main sensory experience would be lots of voices. So they asked me to write a choral piece for that show. And it's a 45 minutes of choral song that I composed. The whole show is we're in a great big circle. So the audience and the choir are in a great big circle. And we sing and various other things happen, multi-sensory things happen. And we've played it at two different festivals so far. And the idea is it's in their repertory as a company now, and they want it to carry on for the next few years, going to different festivals. And the idea, wherever we go, we recruit a community choir from the community. So part of the idea is we're bringing a community of singers and meeting a community of people who live with these disabilities. So we're kind of creating connections within a community between these different groups of people. And so far it's been incredibly successful and a really, really moving thing to be part of. So yes, I'm doing that we're doing that at the Lowry in January, and then we're carrying on doing it for as long as it'll last, really.
And is Lowry from Sheffield? I'm just thinking about going full circle. Is that bringing you back to Sheffield?
That's Salford, the Lowry.
The right answer. Just testing, yeah. See what you did there.
It's on from a Sheffielder's point of view, it's the wrong side of the Pennines.
Yeah. Apologies to anyone from Sheffield. I love the fact that, what's that show again? It's called Frozen.
The company is called Frozen Light, and Frozen Light. The show is called Fire Songs. Yeah. Beautiful. So if there's any festival producers out there wanting to book something extraordinary, then book that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I sincerely, I'd love to come and see it, and I hope they do. And I hope they're listening and do just that.
Yes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So I think we could be on to the third inspirational.
Ah, crikey, we are, blimey. This is a sort of trickier one in that there are various people who, you know, individuals who I find very inspiring within the arts community. And I suppose, I don't know whether to name them or not, really, but it's to do with there are certain individuals I've met who just have a sort of a fearless vision that then they act on. You know, I don't know. It feels quite rare in a way. There are some people I've met who just, they absolutely know what it is they want to do, and rather than do what I tend to do, and this is a great idea, and then nothing happens, they go and do it, you know, and endlessly they do it. You know, they'll invent a project and then they'll do it, and then they'll invent something else, and they'll just carry on doing it. And it's just, that's properly inspirational.
And by all means, mention, just flam out a few names if you want to. But that's okay, so lovely. That's so generous.
Viv Gordon, who's a Somerset artist. She set up her company, the Viv Gordon Company, who I've done quite a bit of work with, and we're doing something in January together called Restless, which is so her work is to do with being a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, and so she wants to break the silence around that subject. So and so her work is about that. And so in January, we're going to work together on one of her projects where she's decided she wants to do this is going around full circle. She wants to do a punk sort of theatre gig style thing about childhood sexual abuse, but she's really drawn to the idea of doing punk you know, and really sort of shouting about it, because that feels like it's really breaking a lot of taboos. So that's a project we're in the process of making. So
and I see the through line there, the clash of domestic abuse and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. And she's amazing. She's just doggedly determined to get her message across. You know, I really admire the energy of that. And then there's two Helens. There's Helen Porter and Helen Chadwick, both of whom are singers. And again, you know, they both just have a thing they want to do, and then they just do it. And it's just, you know, I'm impressed by that. I mean, you know, there are, in a way, the reason I wasn't sure about naming people is because there are, you know, lots of people who do this, really. Yes. But I don't know. Yeah, it's just impressive, really.
That's a lovely rule of three. You've given us three examples.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The best communication happens in threes. How lovely.
Exactly.
And now we could be on to two things that never fail to grab your attention. This is where the squirrels from the film Up No Squirrels come in. So what never fails to grab your attention, Mr. Johnson?
I find it hard to walk past a really good guitar shop.
That's a happy surprise. I thought you were going to say pub there and real ale. But no, guitar shop. Yes.
Yeah. It's quite hard. Yeah. I think that might be a bit of a squirrel moment. Not necessarily just guitar shop, but, you know, sort of musical instrument shop, as long as it's really good. And I can happily spend all day playing all their incredibly expensive guitars and then not buying any of them. I mean, of course, I would buy all of them probably if I could. But so that's an attention grabber. And funnily enough, you did spot the other one. I'm that transparent. A really, really good pub in the mountains, if possible, with a sunset view.
Oh, lovely.
Pretty, you know, it's pretty hard to avoid if I happen to chance upon it. So,
I wish you well. I hope you happen upon it more often than you know. Wonderful.
Yes.
It's great.
Thank you.
Okay, and now a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know until you tell us.
Very hard question, that one. I don't know what's quirky or unusual about me, but I suppose it's slightly unusual that I've never done anything other than what I do for, you know, work-wise. So I've never had a job other than this one.
And especially if your dogged determination, because, you know, what you've been describing is an incredible journey of craftsmanship and of great beauty, but at some cost, because we know the artist's way is not an easy one. You know, we've had many conversations about, you know, the struggle of creativity.
Yeah, it's really hard. You know, especially since COVID, as we all know, we've all seen a lot of people in our industry quitting it. And, you know, it was already pretty hard. And then COVID just was the last straw, wasn't it, for a lot of people. And, you know, yeah, it's a damn hard thing to stay at. And I do sometimes I envy people who have got other things on, you know, side hustles that they can do that are quite remunerative, you know, trades that they've got, I don't know, you know, carpentry skills or whatever it is. And, you know, I suppose that's there's a question later on about what advice would you give to yourself as a younger person. I suppose that's, you know, possibly a bit of an advice I might give to myself as a younger person is get a remunerative trade under your belt that you can do in between times, you know.
And do you have any clues on what that might be now you've got your gift to self from older self?
Well, the trouble is that I'm, you know, I struggle with putting a shelf up. So, you know,
I'm a DIY fuckwit. There's no other way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
So I have this horrible feeling that I do what I do because it is actually the only thing I can do.
Because it's what you do, Tom Johnson.
It's because it's what I do, yeah.
That's a good epitaph. It's what I do. It's what
I
did.
I did.
See what you're doing there, playing with the tenses.
Yes.
So now we'll talk about alchemy and gold. We stay in the clearing. We've done a wonderful bit of tree foliage shakage. Now we stay in the clearing and we're going to talk about alchemy and gold now. You've been giving us by the bucket load anyway, but when you're at purpose and in flow, what are you most happy doing and revealing to the world, Tom Johnson?
Well, probably running a rehearsal, running a room in a rehearsal when it's going really well. Obviously, there are many, many times when it isn't, or when it's just kind of what you're doing. But there are these magical occasional moments when I'm running a room doing whatever it is, you know, either a group of singers or a group of actors or musicians, whatever it is. And we're all just really there and really just making it happen. And there's nothing better, actually, than that.
And the full circle of when your 11-year-old self dressed in your sort of minstrel garb, fiddling a room, that's like facilitating, enabling, fiddling with a room to make the magic of a rehearsal happen.
Yes, full circle. Yes. No, that's right. And, you know, it's funny because I suppose one of the reasons I love my job is the composing bit is really solitary. So, you know, my clearing is the egg house here, where I am by myself and it's really quiet and I'm working. I have the flow to just be here doing my stuff here. But then you have the opportunity to go out and MD and work in a room with people. And that's brilliant, you know, having both. I wouldn't want to do just a sitting composing bit by itself, you know. The collaborative bit is really important and really lovely, really rewarding.
There's a lovely sort of centrifugal force in that. It starts from an inner hub and then emanates out.
Yeah. 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 And as it emanates out, you're having to negotiate lots of other people's opinions and feelings. And, and that's great. I love it. You know, it's fantastic. It's obviously sometimes it's bloody irritating because other people have opinions. But, other people. No, but, you know, it's a fantastic thing about
it. There's that Sartre quote, John Paul, you know, hell is other people. But I think also bliss is other people too.
Well, bit of both.
A bit of both. Yeah. So now then, this is the cake moment, and you've given us the advice to younger self already. So the cake is a cherry on the cake of a multi-layered cake of stuff like what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given? And then we're ramping up to legacy inspired by Shakespeare and all the world's a stage and all the players, when we'll be talking about how, when all is said and done, you would most like to be remembered.
Yes.
Okay. So that's your cake. How would you like to interpret it? Oh, and a favourite quote that's given you sucker.
Okay, well, so my favourite quote is T.S. Eliot, which is, for us, there is only the trying. The rest is not our business. And I like that because, it helps you to not get too bothered about outcome. You know, all you can do is do your best. Just, you know, give it your best shot. And also that's, it's a thing my mum used to say a lot when I was younger. So there's this, you know, comes from her. But also, I'm going to cheat because I've got a few. There's three quotes I like. Another is from my mum, which is actually just her. She says, adapt or die, she says, which I think is quite good. And then there's Beckett, a bit dark, but you must go on. I can't go on. I'll go on. I think that's rather lovely. Best advice I've had. Is something from Greg Banks, although I think he got it from his tutor at Dartington, Joe Richards, and it's trust the process. And I think that's it's really good in work, isn't it? It's really good when you're meeting a new group of people to work with, especially a new director. I think you just have to trust the process and trust that it's going to lead somewhere and be a good thing. But also I think that's a good thing for life as well. Have I missed anything?
No, I'm just really blown away by how what a beautiful interpretation of that part that was. Yeah. And I'm wanting to just hang it there with silence because that was lovely. Bit of Shakespeare now. How, when all is said and done, let's talk about legacy now, Tom. When all is said and done, how would you like to be remembered?
as that guy who became incredibly wealthy and successful age 65.
Perfect. So you are awesome. You are Tom Johnson. As this has been your moment in the Good Listening to Clearing Sunshine, yeah. Is there anything else, Tom, you'd like to say before we do the very important bit of where we can find out more about you? But is there anything else you'd like to say?
Just that it's been a pleasure doing this, and lovely to meet you on the screen over there. And yeah, great. It's been more enjoyable than I thought it would be, and less nerve-wracking. So thank you.
You're very welcome. And where can we find out more about the wonderful Tom Johnson composer, or Thomas Johnson, as he's known on the website, on the Hold Hinterweb, please?
Well, my website is thomasjohnsoncomposer.com. But you can also hear a shed load of my music on SoundCloud. What is it? SoundCloud.com/Thomas F. Johnson. And you can hear lots of music there. And if you do want to get hold of me, you can get hold of me via the website.
So, and what does the F in the F. Johnson stand for?
Frederick, which is my grandfather.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to The Good Listening to Show with the glorious composer and wonderful human being that is Mr. Tom Johnson. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Yes. And I think, unless there's anything else you'd like to say, good night, I think, is coming up.
Good night, and see you for a pint somewhere.
Let's make an absolute point of it. You've been a joy, and you continue to be a joy. And I hope you're minted by the time you're 65 too.
So do I.
Just send cash to Tom Johnson and send some to me too.
Exactly.
Good night.
You've been listening to The Good Listening To Show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from The Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@ThatChrisGrimes.
So until next time, from me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
Goodbye.
So, Tom, you've just been given a damn good listening to. Can I just get your immediate feedback on what that was like for you? What's the curated journey of this been like as an experience?
Very curated, which is good. So very held, very contained. It was really, really good to be able to do a little bit of prep beforehand and know what was coming up. Because I suspect, had you asked me these things without any thought, I'd have forward planning, I would have probably frozen most of the time. So that was really good. No, it's been good. Really great, actually. Yeah.
Wonderful. And if you had an instinct in terms of playing it forward, who would you most recommend I talk to next?
Oh, blimey. Helen Chadwick, who was one of my people that I mentioned, would be very interesting. Yeah.
Thank you. I just thought I don't always ask that. I just thought I would. And in the spirit of playing it forward, I just thought I wanted to know what you'd say. Thank you. So I'll look up Helen Chadwick. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
So thank you very much indeed. I'm going to stop recording there and good night.